DJ, drop a beat.
Not another podcast.
Not another podcast.
Not another podcast.
What the hell is wrong with you people?
Not another podcast.
All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
James.
I am sick and tired of everyone telling me I'm confused.
Bryce.
We're reckless, arrogant, stupid dicks.
Big Jim.
Wubba-lubba-dub-dub. That's my catchphrase, remember?
Samantha.
I have one job on this lousy ship. It's stupid, but I'm gonna do it, okay?
Dan.
I don't know who you are, but I have a very particular lack of skills. I will never be able to find you.
Not another podcast.
Hey, y'all. Welcome to Not Another Podcast.
Again!
You don't do it as good as I do.
I know.
Nobody does it as good as you do.
Plus, you were expecting it, so.
Yeah.
Nobody does it better.
So, just a heads up, guys. I reached out to our good friend, Mr. David Mort from All Things Z. Oops. And I tried to get him on this week, but unfortunately, he's very busy. So.
That drunk sheriff?
Is the good news that he's not here? Strangely.
Good news is he's still alive.
For us, no.
The good news is he's still alive and returning messages.
So he just good had news a is he's too.
Good news is he's still a person. Bad
oh,
news
good.
Is not a person that we can talk to.
He like just he realized like, what the show was and figured he could do better.
Well, he figured I'm not sure. You know, his star is rising. He's got to shake off the dead weight.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not sure James understands what good news is.
I really don't.
Well, he did just have a birthday, so happy birthday.
That's right.
Yes, David, happy birthday. So, I don't know. Have you guys seen the pictures he's been posting about the noir project he's been working on?
Yes.
I saw one, I believe, of him in costume looking just stellar.
Oh, yeah. The sheriff? Yeah. The sheriff looks awesome. No, he's working on a noir detective thing, and he's been posting some shots of that.
Oh,
I was trying to get him on to talk about that and the current state of All Things Z, because they haven't been posting a lot of videos lately, and I know it's because the quarantine has really limited what they can do. So I wanted to talk to him about that, but apparently he's too good for us. So
I mean,
obviously.
Because of the quarantine, he can't use puppets? I don't understand.
Like, no, the quarantine has not allowed either Austin or Tracy to really come and do filming. So he's been doing a lot of it by himself. But because he's been doing it all by himself, I think he's met with some challenges story-wise. So I wanted to talk to him about that and other things and, you know, just check up on him. We haven't talked to him for months.
Make it seem like he's like, yeah, last I saw him, he had a loaded rifle, and he just had that 1,000-yard stare.
He did!
Yeah. Like fucking like the end of Shawshank, like he asked me for 6 feet of rope. Well, how was
Come
I supposed
on, the
to
last
know?
Time we talked to him, we talked about all the time he'd been whacked in the balls. So.
Yeah.
Priceless content that was, damn it.
It was a good show.
Made me happy I don't have balls.
Made me happy I don't have to swing on a rope for a play.
No shit.
Oh, that's right.
that's the true takeaway there is don't ever swing on a rope for a play because it will hurt you and your descendants potentially if you have them.
As
speaking
the young
of
kids
plays,
say, that's the tea, sis.
Jim, you kind of dropped. It was last minute last week. You kind of dropped a little bit of news as to what you're doing theatrically. Danny, you didn't get to hear this.
I did not.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like a quarantine table read. So it'll be people from all over the country.
It's a quarantine read.
Yeah. Of the Breakfast Club.
Oh, nice!
So we're going to be reading or kind of like, you know, radio playing the Breakfast Club, and I am playing Richard Vernon, Vice Principal Richard Vernon.
2 weeks.
Yeah.
For 2 weeks.
2 weeks, Bender.
That's what the ball
got you.
You're going to get the horns.
You know, those, as iconic as those lines are,
Brass is
it's
mine.
The It's the scene where he's in the fucking, where he's got Bender in the closet. And he's just like, when you're away from here and you're wrapped up in your own pathetic life, you know, and that you've forgotten all about this place, they've forgotten all about you, I'm going to be there, I'm going to kick the living shit out of you. You know, not, and it's just like, you're like, damn, this guy is like, he's serious with this threat.
He's like, wildly he's inappropriate with these children.
Yeah, well, it was the 80s. I mean, you could threaten bodily harm on a student and so, it was considered, you know.
Are you going to reenact that scene where he comes running out of the bathroom with the seat cover hanging out of his pants?
No, but I will do the scene with the coffee and the orange slice.
Okay.
Where it's
as long as you do the, you got to do the point, man. The bullhorn.
2 months.
Yeah. I got you for 2 months. Because that is like one of the most iconic things that Principal Vernon does.
Yeah.
I was actually just listening today to the movie commentary done by Court and Fatboy for The Breakfast Club. And they all talked about Vernon and how, like, he especially when he gets in Bender's face, there's a moment afterwards outside where Vernon actually kind of feels bad for being a hard ass.
At what point was this?
I don't remember exactly, but they were talking about, like, there's an expression he has where, like, Vernon actually really feels bad for Bender. And it's just a moment. But I thought about that today. I was like, you know, I bet you, like, Vernon is obviously fucking frustrated with Bender. I mean, Bender is like the bane of his existence.
Well, Bender is just the most recent in a long string of – he's like, I've been testing these kids for 22 years, and every year they get more and more arrogant. So Bender's just the most recent embodiment of his frustrations at these kids who refuse to, you know, just toe the line in his eyes and just be regular teenagers as he sees fit with his most convenient terms and easiest definitions. He sees them very superficially, and this is all about exploring the depths that he himself, as an educator of 22 years, cannot plumb, as he is not quite sensitive to such things. Carl sets him straight, and I love that scene where Carl's just like, man, get over yourself.
Do you think there's part of Vernon that do you think at one point Vernon was Bender, or at least some iteration of Bender?
No.
And maybe
a lot of a you remind me of me at your age type.
I don't think
yeah,
so.
But at the same time, like, he's so hard on Bender because it's like, I see all the mistakes you're going to make.
It's been a long time since I've seen the movie, so the nuance I don't remember.
Yeah, but...
I mean, it's an interesting way to look at it.
Now, let me ask you, though. Being as none of us were, you know, model students or model people in general throughout the course of our life, because let's face it, none of you degenerates were. Did you respond positively to angry, bitter old men pointing fingers at you and telling you that you're a worthless pile of shit? Or did you respond well to somebody going, hey, I've been there. I know what it's like. I know what you're facing down. Let me give you some pointers. So let's put it this way. If he was like Bender back in the day, he got the wrong way to teach it to anybody else on how not to be a fucking retard.
Yeah, so, but
don't say retard.
If you look at it, too, from Bender's point of view, I mean, his father is completely abusive. Bender only really responds to that sort of talk.
Yeah, by being more of a shitheel, not by getting better.
Kind of, yeah, but you see in that moment in the closet, Jim, you were talking about where you know, Vernon's, like, really threatening to kick his ass. You see on Bender's face real fear because he's facing his father.
Yeah, it's all he knows is abuse and people shouting and screaming at him.
But all it's going to do is make him double down on his rage and hatred and backlash. Yeah, he's scared in the moment because there's an adult fucking bearing down on him just like his old man does. So he knows how to pull inside and shell up real hard to protect himself. But the minute he gets out, he screams bloody fucking vengeance on the universe. It only doubles down the worst.
Yeah.
Just saying.
I agree. I see Bender not as a bully, but just as like someone who's lost and is stuck in a system that, you know, he doesn't want to conform to.
Well, in a system that doesn't even care if he exists either.
Exactly. He's faced with the eventuality that, you know, you're not a special, unique snowflake. High school is not this perfect time where, you know, all your dreams come true or whatever. Eventually you get out into the real world, and yeah, the real world doesn't give a shit if you, you know, if you exist or not, because it's just going to keep on doing what it's doing. I think that Vernon wasn't Bender in high school, but he knew a Bender, and either he idolized him or he saw all the shit he got away with and it pissed him off something fierce. I feel like
would have been able to get away with it.
Yeah, he was. I think Vernon was trying to be an overachiever, or was trying to be a Bender, and couldn't quite pull it off. And so that's the reason why. Because I mean, if Bender is so much of a, you know, a throwaway, disposable student, why does he zone in so much on Bender? Why does he be that? Like, I'm holding a grudge for years after you leave here. Like, a sane person doesn't do that. Somebody who's, like, dealing with a lot of shit.
For Vernon?
Yeah.
For Vernon, Bender is the guy who stole his Claire.
Maybe.
I'd also argue the point that there's a strong likelihood that he just sees him as the penultimate, you know, troublemaker. So it is the bane of his existence. And if he feels like he could just scare this one fucking kid straight and get him to start being better, then true pride he would have in his job. But the only way he knows how to deal with that is literally by just reinforcing teardown tactics to make somebody scared straight, essentially. And, yeah. He's just an asshole. There. Yeah. I said it. John Hughes wrote an asshole into a movie. Who'd have guessed it?
But you need an antagonist. You need a bad guy. And
you need an asshole.
What I love so much about The Breakfast Club is it doesn't have a Hollywood ending. You know, it has an ending for – it has a realistic ending of that moment, but not overt, not like – oh, we're just gonna be the best of friends forever. You know, like they all went on to, you know, start up a tech company that, you know, went tits up in 4 years or whatever. But it ends with a very real feeling that you didn't just watch a caricature of high school life. You watched like a dissection of it.
Yeah.
And this is from someone who's watched it a lot of times.
It's a solid movie.
I own on cassette tape the soundtrack to this movie. And the thing is, everybody knows Don't You Forget About Me. That's the anthem, right? Duh. But there is a lot of other music that's in that movie that virtually nobody knows about, really. And a lot of it is instrumental, which, considering who John Hughes was at the time, he could have had his pick of anything, any artist he wanted. He was, in a way, and I could be off here. This is just my own two cents, but in a way, he was kind of the Joss Whedon of his time, right? He had a good finger on how to put together a movie that generation was really going to enjoy and could stand the test of time. But so yeah, using these instrumental pieces. And not filling it with a bunch of, you know, pop or commercially, you know, known music, but yet still establishing a great mood, a great environment with those instrumental pieces.
Fair enough. I mean, instrumental music in general, if used properly in a movie, just really helps to bring the emotion of the scene or really to life. Because I'd imagine there's probably somebody on YouTube who goes through movies and just cuts out the score or cuts out instrumental bits during really serious moments, and you just kind of sit back there going, it's not as good.
Well, it's like, I think it was you, Danny, who posted up not too long ago a scene from Return of the Jedi where the music was altered.
Yeah.
It really does show how music really does make a scene. If you have the wrong music or sometimes even no music where music is needed, I mean, a scene can completely fall flat, you know? And I honestly, I've noticed that when putting together episodes of Homestead. Most of Homestead is without music.
Right. But
whenever I do an action scene, I add music because it helps with the pacing. But also, and I've only done it once so far, but something that's really emotional, I will put music in there.
Right.
I mean, the scene works by itself without it, but when you add the music, it amps it up.
And it grabs it a bit more.
And I think music, especially in movies or TV shows, is we take it for granted that that there's music there. But I invite anyone to try and watch their favorite movie without the soundtrack to it and see how it plays.
I'm not going to lie. The very first time I ever really was consciously aware of the music adding to a moment in a film that was really taking me was Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers. I was watching it in theaters. And when the Ents go to war against Isengard, the music that was happening in that moment just was like, this is so fucking cool. Oh, my God.
I'll give you one.
And it caught my attention because the music was the only thing really playing for just those couple of seconds while you're watching all these Ents emerge from the forest line and you're like, oh, you're so fucked.
It's about to get real!
Dude, seriously, but the music score was just so perfectly timed, perfectly set, that it just added fucking immeasurable amount of emotional badassery to that scene alone.
Agreed.
So it's like, yeah, the score makes a massive difference in a movie or a show or anything. And honestly, it's like Seth MacFarlane said, a lot of people don't realize that he has a 42-piece orchestra that works on every single episode of Family Guy and all of his other shows. And people just don't notice that there is a literal 42-piece orchestra scoring the entire shows.
Yeah, a lot of shows will just use a guy who, you know, has a lot of synthesizers.
Exactly. You know? Knows how to multi-track.
But
I just love the fact that there's some classically trained musicians out there that
working on a cartoon.
You know, just like, so what did you do today? Oh, I worked in bringing in a falsetto piece for a song that circulates around a talking piece of excrement.
Oh, well, we had to really make the fart joke land, so we scored.
Yeah, trying to get a piccolo to sound like, you know, amoebic dysentery.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, I think the best example of how music makes or breaks a scene is horror movies.
Yep.
Because the music will build up the tension and then drop out. And you'll have these scenes where you're all tense and then there's no music, there's no sound, and people are on the edge of their seats, and then when something happens, there's that big musical sting to, you know, amp up the scare.
Yeah.
There's also something to be said for silence in any movie. Like, if you have a director who's got a really good ear for when the music needs to happen, what volume it needs to happen, when silence needs to happen, you have magic, because there are moments, like, I can't remember what, if it was a show, there was some horror movie or horror show, and the end credits was just fucking silence, and you're just left with, like, oh my gosh, and then nothing. It was absolutely genius, but there's just, if you have someone who understands those cues and how to use them effectively,
oh yeah,
it just takes it to another level, whether it's music or silence. It's great.
A Quiet Place I saw in the theater, and you could have heard a mouse queef in that fucking, I shit you not. It was, and it was like, and it wasn't just silent. Like, I was afraid to make a, it was almost
as though
I was haunted by the, like, it had sucked me in so completely. And some music there could have helped build the tension, but.
The silence built the tension more.
Exactly, and that's where
for that particular movie, yes, it did.
Yep.
A good PD will know how to know when to do that.
Yep.
I have another example that I had to write down so I didn't forget it. That I know hit almost all of us right in the feels as young lads and ladies. A little scene called "The Death of Optimus Prime."
Oh yeah,
that keyboard synthesizer piece. Like wherein like his, and it's sort of going along with his like his health, beeps and boops or whatever, his life support system or whatever. An interesting fun fact about that is that the person who wrote that piece, same guy that wrote the music for the training montage in Rocky IV, is a guy by the name of Vince DiCola. And you're like, who the fuck is Vince DiCola and why did I give a shit? Well, Vince DiCola went to a little high school called Lancaster Catholic High School, same high school that I went to. So.
That's pretty badass.
Thank you for sticking around for pointless stories with Big Jim.
Well, you know what, Jim? That was a very good lame claim to fame, and I appreciate your efforts, buddy.
Well, lame claim to fame, I like that.
And again, to Samantha's point, I just rewatched Infinity War. And after the snap, when people start disappearing, there's no music at all.
Nope. And you're absolutely right. The Art of Silence is beautiful, especially when you have a movie that has such well-orchestrated compositions behind it. I mean, one of the movies that I really, really love and enjoy is The Artist. Now, that's a silent film. And so it's almost predominantly required that the soundtrack is something that puts you in the mood for what you're seeing. But there are a couple of scenes where there is no sound whatsoever. You're just literally left with a, what the fuck's going on? Did we lose it there? What's happening? Yeah. And that's what they want you to feel in that moment, because one of them is a moment where the main character, George, is basically having a nightmare about movies going to sound, and the world actually starts having audio sounds to it. And you're just kind of taken aback, because up until that point you had had the music score that's kind of, you know, giving you everything you needed, to understand. And now all he hears is visceral sounds like, you know, glasses on tables, dog barking, things like that. And it weirds him the fuck out. So the use of just sounds for that movie was genius. It was.
Dude,
really
I will do you one better. So there's a movie that I'm sure we've all heard of. I'm not sure if you've all seen it, but in 1927, Fritz Lang put out a movie called Metropolis.
Oh yeah.
About 10 years ago, they redid the music.
Yeah.
Like, it's a completely different score.
Yep.
I've seen both versions, and I gotta say, the newer version with the newer music is somehow more powerful.
Interesting. Yeah, I'd almost disagree. Something about it for me was the older score felt like it fit better. But again,
it was of the time, no right. doubt, but it just, like, the newer music made it feel like it was a film that could have been made today in an older style.
That's fair. Well, I mean, I know they digitally remastered it.
It's hard to follow, but it's an amazing piece of work, and it stands the test of time. That movie's over almost 100 years old.
Yeah.
It's just a monument to the vision of a director way back then when – you know, directors saying like, oh, he's really amazing, he's very original. Well, he has learned from the techniques, the skills or whatever, from these other people. Whereas these other people, they laid the groundwork. So they were the trial and the error. So to have a movie like that be so early on in the infancy of motion picture still be relevant and have a powerful impact 100 years later. That's incredible.
And on top of that, if you ever want to watch a movie that for the time was a truly impressive work of special effects, watch W.F. Murnau's Faust. Because I think that was made in 1927 or 1930 or something like that. Very, very old. But the practical effects he put into that movie are still held up to a high standard today. And going back and watching it, it's a silent film. It's black and white. But what he was able to accomplish with practical effects and just camera trickery and just shot manipulation in general, it really did kind of set the standard for special effects that was really impressive. And again, the score for it is immaculate. Yeah.
Did any of you happen to see the brand new Bill and Ted movie?
No. Yes.
You did, Jim?
I have.
Yeah,
I was going to, but we got sidetracked.
Here's the whole story. All right.
So no shit, there I was.
Bill and Ted switch bodies. And they have to find a talisman. No, it's... I will say this, and this will not ruin anything or any aspect of the actual movie itself. I saw some reviews online that said it's not excellent, but it's a good time. For me, as a Bill and Ted fan, it hit all the right notes, pun intended, for what I wanted out of a third Bill and Ted movie. Right.
That's fair.
You got to take into consideration how many years has it been since like 2 came out?
Yeah, like 20, I think.
Yeah.
No, it's been more than that. More than that. Bogus Journey was, what, 91? Yeah.
I think there was a way so we could look it up.
Almost 30 years.
Yeah.
Like 28 years.
And it's... Excellent
Adventure was 89, Bogus Journey was 91.
Yep.
You know, it wasn't perfect by any stretch.
Loved Bogus Journey.
Oh, yeah.
The concert at the end of the movie alone made me want to learn how to play guitar.
Absolutely. Oh, dude.
God gave rock and roll to you, bro. Took another, me years to figure out that was a Kiss song.
Another soundtrack that I have on cassette tape.
You know what soundtrack I have on cassette tape? Ren and Stimpy.
Nice.
I think Samantha.
My brother and I listen to that all the time. What?
I think Samantha wins.
She does.
And Alice Cooper was the only other one I remember.
The only cassette tape I still have left is Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon.
Nice.
If I have any cassette tapes left, they're all from local Portland bands.
I have on cassette tape the soundtrack for Aliens.
Nice.
And it's all orchestral, obviously. There wasn't like a cut song where like Ripley's just singing about, you know, Xenomorphs.
Jim, didn't you tell us when you got to back to PA, you found like a bunch of like briefcases of cassettes?
I found my old attaché case that I kept in my my car, my old Volkswagen, that had all of my Sabotage cassette tapes, everything from Power of the Night through Wake of the Magellan, I believe. Or no, Dead Winter Dead's also in there. But, yeah, all my soundtracks, a couple of mixtapes that were just, you know, percolated around. This is different time. We had to make our own set lists.
It's fair.
Oh, yeah. Mixtapes. How much fun were those to make?
They were pretty badass, really. I mean, I always liked...
There was a craftsmanship that went into creating a good mixtape.
Especially if you were ripping everything off of the radio. Like, it took timing and precision to be listening to the radio. So you get the cue up that your favorite song was coming up next, or you'd get that one note.
And you're like, just hovering, yeah.
Dude, seriously, it's like, it's coming. Got it! Fucking got another commercial. Stop.
That was That was where I, as just like a regular person who listened to the radio, learned to hate DJs who could hit the post.
Oh, fuck those guys. They ruined this, every like, song.
It's like, oh, right, the beginning of like, Vivo Rocky was starting. And he's just like, oh, don't forget this weekend, don't forget to check out Chuckasaurus. It's going to be bad down at the main drag.
Shut the fuck up and play the song.
But here's the thing is we were all trained to do that is oh, you yeah. have to use the time hit and the talk post, about what yeah. you need to.
Oh, I got it. I just hated it when it fucking interrupted my favorite song.
Yeah. I hated being that person, but sometimes you had to be because you had to hit all your
radio.
You had to hit all your points, and like I'm sitting here like, shit, I'm going to be a dick, but I got to talk over this 30-second fucking musical outro.
Oh yeah. You get your talk break, but your PD was like you have some music. You go into the next song. It's, but I don't want to ruin the song.
Yeah. Like the best part is the ending or the beginning, you know.
When I found out that there was an actual term for it called hitting the post, I'm just like, I have hated you all.
Did you die on the inside?
I think it was Bozic who told me about the term hitting the post. And I was just like, oh. And so now to this day, now that I no longer live in a world where I have to rely on recording my music off of the radio, and I didn't, if I had a boombox that had the ability to have a cassette player hooked up to the radio, a lot of times that cassette player would break. So I would have the tape recorder, you know, just sort of 69ing with my boombox.
Yeah.
Trying to just capture the audio. So it's like from one blown out speaker to one blown out, you know, microphone. And it's like, oh, the quality is just like, oh, you can hear like dogs barking and like police sirens in the background. Like, I don't
Didn't
remember
it suck like when you pulled the cassette out and the player tried to eat the tape and you had to gingerly, like surgically remove it and then reel it back up. But that part of the song never sounded the same again.
And then you.
Yeah, the pencil, the old pencil.
See, being a, yep. A poor kid, if your tape like got eaten, you know, I would like do everything that I could to salvage it. If I had to cut off parts of the tape and like take a piece of like just regular like just Scotch tape and like surgically like marry the two parts together, I would. There was a couple of. There's a rap group in the 80s known as the Fat Boys. They were I was big fans of them. They had a couple of big hits along with Chubby Checker for a hot second.
The Twist, yeah.
Yeah. But they had a couple of albums before then that I was a big fan of, and the crappy boombox that I had kept eating the one tape.
You liked them because they did that song with Freddy Krueger.
That's right, yeah. And I...
Are you ready for Freddy?
Yes. Wow, you had a pull, you had a Fat Boys pull that I forgot about. Well done, sir.
Golf clap.
Yeah, they did the Twist with Chubby Checker. They did Wipeout with the Beach Boys.
Oh, that's right.
But one of their biggest claim to fame was "Are You Ready for Freddy?"
That was, and I'm not sure if that was a licensed song.
No, it was because Robert Englund is on it.
Okay.
As Freddy.
Because Fresh Prince did Nightmare on My Street, which was
That was right in that time where Freddy was everywhere. So yeah. He was doing all that stuff. The one song I remember from the Fat Boys was My Nuts.
I was just gonna say that. My Nuts. My nuts.
That's a great song.
Classic.
You know what, man? My nuts, man.
My nuts were dragging all over the floor. Oh my god. Yeah, this was.
When was the last time you watched Disorderlies?
Shit, dude, I did have it on cassette. I didn't have it on VHS. I'm not even lying. I had Disorderlies was me and my buddy Dwayne's like favorite movie. We would wear that shit out. Disorderlies is about these three, almost Three Stooges, you know, style comedic fat actors are down on their luck and somehow befriend this really wealthy old white guy. And they become somehow his caretakers and are just like, you know what? The reason why you can't get out of your chair and why your health is so bad is because you're taking all these pills. So they stop giving him his medication, and somehow he gets better.
Well, wasn't it because it, like, his nephew or something was trying to kill him?
No, he was right.
That classic trope of, you know, family member trying to get the family fortune.
That's right. Yeah. But then they discovered it. But yeah, there's just scenes of just these three obese men running down a hall, running at the camera down a hallway, pushing a elderly white man in a wheelchair with, like, just complete disregard for his actual safety is just fucking hilarious to this day. I'm pulling up
the
image in my head.
How else do you push an old white man?
You know,
wheelchair.
It's a good point, Samantha.
I mean, the only way to do it is fully commit.
I mean, yeah, you either go hard or you just don't.
Yeah, there you go.
Just saying.
It really was a great movie. It was stupid, but it was really fun.
Some of those are the best movies, though. Yeah.
If a movie is stupid, that's one thing. But if it's stupid in the sense that it makes you laugh at least, then it's worth your time at least a little bit.
Do you guys remember... Do you remember The Great Outdoors?
Heck yes!
I love The Great Outdoors.
So, Candy. Dan Aykroyd masterpiece.
I don't think Ryan had ever seen it or he didn't remember it. So we watched it last week and I was so happy watching because I grew up watching this movie.
Oh, yeah.
And John Candy is one of my favorite people ever. Yeah, I know, right in the heart, right in the field.
Great Outdoors was my first. Not celebrity crush, but I had a major thing for the local girl.
Oh, yeah. She's so cute.
Yeah. That girl I had such a crush on, and she was my measuring post for all the girls I would date for the longest.
She's cute, but, you know, she's not super cute.
I liked her a lot because she reminded me physically of Alyssa Milano, who I had a huge crush on, and still to this day.
Have you seen the show Insatiable?
No.
It's funny as shit, and she's sexy as hell in that. Like, she's got that 50s like housewife style going on. You'll like it. Are you writing? I just see him looking down. I'm like, he's writing
it
down.
You only need one movie. If you got an Alyssa Milano crush, there's only one movie.
Embrace of the Vampire.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know that one.
Oh, my dear Lord.
Embrace of the Vampire was the first movie she did.
Excuse me, this was my movie I was talking about.
Crush. Back off.
And Bogart.
We can all have the same crush, James. It's okay.
No, it was the first movie she did. Like, she had, like, this really rebellious streak when she left Who's the Boss. Mm-hmm. She got tatted up because Tony Danza didn't want her to get tattooed. And she did this movie, and it was the first time she did nudity, and it broke the world.
Well, I don't know if they tried to bury it because of – this was her trying to get away from her image. You know, her teen steam kind of like, you know, squeaky all-American girl kind of image. She's like, where can I go that's the total opposite of that? Vampires and Red Shoe Diary softcore pornography, girl-on-girl action, Alyssa Milano. And I'm not sure what the other actress's name is, but she's a knockout also.
The first movies I remember seeing Alyssa Milano in was Double Dragon. And the other one was Fear.
Yep.
Yeah.
Those movies were my introduction with her.
I want to say my introduction was the same. I think mine was Double Dragon.
Mine was Commando.
Before I noticed who the hell she was.
Yeah.
Because I had grown up watching, you know, shit like Who's the Boss and stuff like that. And so I visually knew her, but I didn't know where she was from.
Exactly,
before I Google a bitch.
Who is this bitch?
That was the original name for the website, but Google this bitch. It seems a little abrasive. Can we shorten it? How about just Google? All right, that's fine. But we'll know.
100%. There's a website called Google This Bitch.
She is 2 years older than me, so when I first started watching Who's the Boss, I immediately connected with her, and as we both grew up, I got like that major crush on her. And everything.
Hormones.
You know she did 3 pop albums in Japan, and I have
really?
Up the sleeve of your favorite jacket.
I had no idea.
Awful.
So awful. Wait,
that doesn't
James,
surprise me.
You just said that Alyssa has 3 pop albums in Japan?
Yes.
You know what else do they have in Japan? Sex pillows.
Porn
custom made to have whatever visage you might like on there. So I'm just saying, if you wanted to complete the Alyssa Milano experience, you could have on VHS a copy
hey, honey,
of
can I...
Embrace of the Vampire.
No. Hey, Jim.
No.
Birthday ideas.
The yeah. wife said.
Well, I mean, we used to sell at the porn store. We had the fleshlights, obviously, that you know everyone's seen. It's either
obviously.
A mouth or a vagina or a butt, some orifice that you can, you know, whatever. But we came out, we had some signature line fleshlights that we never sold. And one was for, say you're a lonely goth and you want to jerk off, but you want to keep it real even while you're spanking it. But we've got a fleshlight with fake vampire teeth that are in the mouth in the fleshlights.
Samantha, also, we've seen this movie.
I wonder why
yeah,
we haven't been able to sell those. I mean,
yeah, with Vegemite
like
and Tata.
Consumer's yep. number one product right up with
Step
Stop
Plop.
Tickling Me Elmo, you know.
I mean, if you're referring to teeth, it's not quite
bad
the
dog.
Same thing.
Bad dog!
That guy looks like Harry Styles. Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Vagina, da, da, da. That movie's fabulous.
That movie's
You're such great. A crooner, Jim. There you go. Keep it going.
Well, there's just some phrases that you hear, and it's like you want
to
sing them.
You have like, to sing it. There's no
yeah.
other option.
Vagina, dentata. You know, Hakuna Matata, vagina, dentata. Interchangeable.
Vagina, dentata.
Oh,
it's
yes.
not a problem free.
What a terrifying thing.
Really inappropriate cover. And then get sued by Disney.
Well, yeah.
Oh, that's awful.
See, degenerates, the lot of you.
Agreed.
You're here
I'm
too,
not,
buddy.
Yeah.
I'm not arguing this point.
I and... know what I am, thank you.
And now, thanks to the internet, so does everyone else.
Oh, if they didn't know, I mean, they just weren't paying attention.
I played Ryan those clips, James, that you sent, the what you picked up the isolated audio.
Oh.
He was the one that Danny said, and he was like, is that what? And I was like, no.
It was so
out
funny
of context.
Because when I when
this
I
is a bitch. Fuck you guys.
When I listened, because we all missed it. Bryce was the only one to pick up on it.
Yeah,
so
I
didn't know what he said. So when I listened back, I was like, oh my God, we might have to fire Danny.
I knew what he said, but I understood the context, and I didn't put it in a different context until Bryce did. And then I was like, oh my
yeah.
gosh.
Well, and then
yeah,
Danny.
That's all right. My total defense to that is Bryce is the true racist.
Yes.
Yeah. He was the only one who heard it.
Because he's
way.
Not here to defend
I didn't
himself.
Say it that way. And yeah, fuck him. He's not here. So.
Well, like, I get the context, and it was fine. Like, in context, it's fine. But
well,
it's
no,
like...
the explanation, Danny, that you gave when I saw you was, you know, in your head, you were trying to say, you know, stab
gloom.
The blues away or stab the mm-hmm. darkness away.
The dark
the gloomies. I
the
was gloomies. Trying to
but that's not what came out.
I know, and that's the problem.
And then all the stuff that I cut of Sam was all for Jim's benefit.
Well, thank yeah. you.
Phrases he asked to be isolated.
Like the beginning of this show when she asks how salty it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Bookmark the fuck out that.
I would like access to these links if I could.
I sent them to you.
They're in our group chat,
yeah,
buddy.
We're in the group chat.
Oh.
Pay attention to the messenger chat.
It's like... weeks ago, though.
You even gave a thumbs up on them when I posted them.
Wow.
Let's see if we can find the date.
So now we know Jim will just blindly thumbs up and like stuff.
He just likes
like
it.
And subscribe.
Good enough.
Thanks for putting that up.
Would you rather I not like them? I mean, a lot of mixed messages over here.
I mean, maybe.
So is this like in our honest opinion is what I'm saying.
Is this in our messenger?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm trying to go back and see what date it was.
It's like 3 or 4 weeks ago. Last time Bryce was on.
That's a lot of messages, y'all.
That's going to be like a month.
What I should do is go through and find all the dirty things.
Oh, got it. August 7th.
Bring them all together.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And just call it Danny's bookmark mix.
August 7th, Jim.
All right.
There's three little audio clips.
Oh, wait, I think I do know. I did listen to these.
There's a Batman GIF thumbs up.
Yeah, wasn't that the one where she said, be careful not to choke, it's small?
Yeah. Don't choke on it, it's small.
Which was so great.
I'm Amber. All right,
both
folks.
Both of my dogs are laying behind me snoring.
Well, that's what I'm fixing to do here in a moment, so I'm going to have to say goodbye, good night, farewell, eat shit, and fuck y'all.
Glad your interview went well.
We're so proud of you. Most
after times. Telling us to eat shit.
Hey, you know, well, got to keep my priorities straight. Have a great night, guys.
Bye,
see you,
buddy.
Danny.
Bye.
And so, I think with that, we will
well,
call
now that he's gone.
We got to talk about our Patreons.
You want to talk to the Patreons? What do you want to say to the Patreons?
Hey, everybody. It's Jim Willig from the show. The show, like, just wondering, like, what are you up to? Like, you know, you talk a lot about stuff that I'm sure you talk about when you're with your friends. Like, when we are with ours, when we are us friends talk about stuff you talk about, I'm sure, a lot of times, too, when it's just, like, you guys together, like we are together when we talk, doing these things once a week or more. I'm just saying you can do more times if you want than just a week, once a week. You could do it every day if you wanted to. I think that'd be good for you.
Mention the Patreon.
We have a Patreon if you would like to join us. Or others. Well, I mean, we're not on it because we are it. So I mean, if you want to be on us, I mean, if you want to be in us, no. If you want access to it, I mean, if you want to, it's hard to describe. Like at times,
tell them about the tears.
I'm crying a lot more.
No,
there's different tiers for the Patreon. Like, if you want to just go like $1 a month, thank you for the heads up. I would appreciate it. It's gonna go off on this whole like bad dream I had. But so there's different tiers, like the $1 tier, and that gives you like access to like stuff. And then there's like a $2 or $3 tier, and then there's like a $5 tier. See, I do know stuff. And so if you want to do that, you can with stuff and money. If you want to give it to us, that'd be great. And then we could do more stuff when we talk like this. I mean, not like this. I mean, other stuff. And there's other people also talking, not just me. Because, I mean, if it were just me, it'd be like this for like an hour. Like, that'd be crazy, right? Like, you'd be like, who the fuck is this guy? And he'd be like, I don't know who I'm talking to. And it would be like for like way too long. And eventually people would be like, what are you listening to? And you'd be like, this guy's having a breakdown. And they're just like, well, why are you listening? Shouldn't you call somebody? I'm like, I don't know. It seems kind of entertaining. And then hopefully things turn out right. So if you want to be a part of this or that, do it. Just do it.
Patreon.com.
Patreon.
Not another Patreon.
/ not another Patreon.
Thank you, Jim. I think you've just guaranteed that no one is going to donate.
Cut, print. That was gold. Fuck you. That was genius gold right there.
Both so, Bree and I are over here dying, man.
James, do me a favor. When you save the audio of this, can you also save the video? Are you able to do that?
Yeah, yeah.
And then I would like, if you can, to just chop off that ending and then send it to me, because we're going to post that on Facebook.
Done and done.
And then end it at, that was gold, fuck you.
Oh,
I don't even know how long that was, but yeah, it was.
I don't care. I could have let it go for like another 10 minutes, man. You're awkward trying to sell and clearly not knowing anything about the page. And then I'm like, tell them about the tears. I cry a lot.
That was, oh my gosh. That was so fun. I was not expecting that, and I was just, it was so hard not to die a little in comedic glory.
No, it was a perfect moment.
It was great.
No, not those tears. Oh, yeah, we have tears, like levels.
like, thanks for the heads up.
We have to do that every episode. Just, okay, now time to talk about the Patreon. Jim?
Oh yeah, we're still doing it. We're still doing it.
Favorite though was like, and then you could be in us or on us.
Or... how it works.
Oh, that was awful and beautiful all at the same time. Thank you, sir.
Well, I mean, if I can scrape one off like that a week, I feel...
I'm going to figure out a way to just, on our webpage, just make sure that is the first video we see. And if I can just scrunch it down to just you.
You can't. Yeah,
begging
there's a way
for money.
To. That's good stuff.
I don't know.
Who could say no to this sales pitch?
Hey, everyone.
Oh, man. There was a guy I knew that... He would just do you come down, you just sort of like go off in front of a green screen, and he would just edit everything else behind you, and he was brilliant with like all the clips and the cutaways and stuff that he would do. And just to have something like that kind of going on while this just babbling is occurring.
The only thing missing was a green screen behind you, buddy.
Well, there are things now, like Instagram Stories has a filter where it's the green screenless green screen, and you can put whatever you want behind you. So you can actually record it and download it without posting it anywhere. And then Zoom has a non-green screen background. Like, you don't have to have a green screen for the background. So,
well, tell you what I'll do. I will edit the video down to just that thing, and then I'll put it up on the Google Drive.
Okay.
You can do whatever, because I don't think I have the capability to just shrink it down to just Jim.
Yeah, I'll have to play around with the edit, just because I just don't know how to yet, but I know that you can, and that I watch a lot of YouTube people that do it, so yeah. I'm like, I know it's possible. So, yeah.
I could probably look at – actually, I think – no, I might – let me play around with it. I'll do it as soon as we're done.
If you can do it, cool. If not, just send me the raw section, and then yeah. I'll play with it.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to watching that again and just hearing Samantha and I eating our tongues, trying not to laugh.
I was trying to get
that she's biting her head, and I'm looking at Bree, and she's just openly crying, laughing.
Silently.
So.
Well, James, before you go, though, I had a question about my cool edit.
Yes, let's end the show.
Okay.
So, everyone, thank you for listening.
Oh, that was still the show?
Yeah.
Oh,
that
Jesus.
Was all the show,
okay.
Buddy. Thanks for listening, and please, for Jim's sake, join our Patreon. Otherwise, we're going to make him repeat this commercial over and over and over. And we'll
after
talk to you
after a sales pitch like that, I mean, how can they say no?
How could you?
Help a gym. Donate on Patreon.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Not Another Podcast. There are so many places for you to find us outside of www.notanotherpodcast.com. For instance, you can find us on Facebook at Not Another Podcast. You can also find us on Tumblr at www.notanotherpodcast.tumblr.com. You can also find me, Samantha Stark, on Twitter at SamanthaStark3. And you can find James on Twitter as well under James Spooky, spelled with an I-E, not A-Y. And you wanted it, you asked for it, you got it. You can also find us now on iTunes under, you guessed it, Not Another Podcast. We'll talk to you soon. Peace out, Not Another Podcasters.